Chapter 7. At a few minutes before 6 that night, Jesse parked the Explorer in front of the First Episcopal Church of Marshport. He always wondered if they'd originally planned to have a second or third Episcopal, with the thought of franchising them in the area, like Taco Bell's. Jesse had never been one for attending any kind of church regularly. But with old ones like this, he loved the architecture more than the idea of them. The red brick and the spires and the ornate windows. Loved the way they were so obviously built to last. Wondered all over again where the financing had come from at the time they were being built. This one was more than 100 years old. Maybe there had been a Friends of Marshport to raise the money back in the last century. The Ukrainian mob had taken over the running of the town well into the start of this century, before a famous shooting war that was compared at the time to gunfight at the OK Corral made Marshport essentially start all over again. At the time, Jesse had heard that a private detective he knew from Boston had been in the middle of all that, after his best friend had nearly been shot to death by one of the Ukrainians. Jesse never found out for sure, but it sounded like the detective. Spencer, his name was. A total badass himself with whom Jesse had worked a couple of times. Even Sonny said he was the best. The message board out front gave the schedule of Sunday services. Nothing there about the higher power the people in the basement were about to discuss. Maybe it was implied. It was church, after all. Jesse left his revolver and badge in the glove compartment. He didn't like being without a gun, even in a house of worship. He was carrying a Glock 40, semi-automatic, magazine, no clip, 15 to 17 rounds. But even though he was here on official business, he was still one of them in the room, part of the club, not the chief of police from the next town over. "Hi, I'm Jesse." He sat in the back. He always sat in the back, except at rehab, when they made you sit in a circle with a much smaller group. But he looked at the room differently than he had last night, looking at it with cop eyes tonight, checking for faces he recognized. The speaker gave her name as Laura. She was a pretty blonde woman in her 30s, maybe 40s, who'd been there the night before. Said she'd been an advertising executive in Boston, happily married to a man she described as a biggie on the go. She smiled when joking that she knew it was going to shock them, but that she'd never thought she had a problem with alcohol. Thought she had her drinking under control, even during her girls gone wild days in college. But then she was into the drinking life full throttle. It was just part of the skill set of her business life, or so she told herself. Like bullshitting people. Business lunches and dinners got longer and longer. She got caught in her first affair. The biggie on the go left her. Then she didn't need the excuse of a business dinner. She just started going to bars. Before long, she was leaving with strange men. Jesse thought of Annie leaving the scupper and the strange man she'd met on the way home. "That's the way I thought of them," she said. "Strange. Never imagining the strange one was me." She was on a downhill run by then. Lost her job, lost the house. Ended up in a motel in Quincy, having been beaten up. She used her phone to call the cops. One of them, a woman, took her to a meeting that night. Laura said she was 11 months sober. She was working again in the advertising business from home. She'd run the Boston Marathon in April. The people in the room applauded when she finished. It was time for cookies and coffee. By now, Jesse knew that cookies and coffee were the 13th step of AA, after the one about carrying the message to other alcoholics. "First time you spoke?" Jesse said to her. "You could tell?" "Sometimes I can," he said. It didn't sound like a story you'd told before. "Finally screwed up my courage," she said. "Pretty sure courage was going to the first meeting," he said. He put out his hand. "Jesse," he said. "You're the cop," she said. Jesse grinned. "Well, not the only one." He took out his phone and showed her the picture of Paul. He heard the sharp intake of breath. "Oh, my God," she said. "He's dead. We were all just here." She looked up at Jesse. "How? When?" She shook her head quickly, almost furiously, as if flies were buzzing around it. "I'm stammering," she said. He told her how Paul had died and when. "I had to get out of here last night," Jesse said. "A thing over in my town. I talked to him for a minute. Wondered if you might have after I left." She didn't look to Jesse as if she'd taken a lot of time on hair and makeup. But this close to her, he saw the age around her eyes, or perhaps the mileage. The old Indiana Jones line. Not the years, the mileage. There was a tiny scar, unhidden by the makeup, on her chin. Her eyes were very blue, almost violet. She reminded him a little of Sunny, an older, sadder version of Sunny. Just not as pretty. Few were. "We did sit here and talk," she said. "He said what he'd said when he put his hand up. He just needed a meeting. Said he needed a shot of courage tonight, not bourbon." "All I've got is his first name," Jesse said. "No way to ID him, at least not yet. Did you say anything that might help me figure out how he ended up here?" She tilted her head, ran a hand through her long hair, frowning. "He really didn't," she said. "He asked me if I wanted to grab a burger. I thanked him and told him no. I already had plans. I really did, but I don't come here looking to meet guys. He said no worries. He sort of had to be somewhere, too. Then he asked me to wish him luck."
"You say why?"
"He did not, and I didn't ask."
"You ask where he was going?"
"That I did ask," Laura said. "He said paradise. Then he said that from what he knew, maybe they should call it Fool's Paradise.